Hello and welcome back to another episode of L&D Disrupt. I feel like I'm saying this all the time recently, but we've got something different for you again today. We recently hosted the very first L&D Drop-In, a live event where over 1 hour we brought in four experts to tackle one big topic: how we build engaging, personalized learning experiences. We gave each expert 15 minutes to share their most practical advice, and you're going to hear from one of those experts now. Just a quick reminder that if you've not already signed up for HowNow's What the Fluff Bootcamp, you can still sign up completely free today and access this 6-module self-paced course for building a winning L&D strategy. Just head to gethownow.com/WTF-bootcamp today. But that's it from me, so enjoy this section from the L&D Drop-In. Megan, hopefully you're here with us as well.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, Megan. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for joining us earlier over in the US, aren't you? So this is early in the morning for you.
This is the one time the time change actually played in my favor. So instead of 6, it turned to 7. So we're doing okay.
The planets aligned. Cool. Megan, you're going to share some great advice with us on understanding your culture, your learners, and how we can keep them engaged. But as with our other two guests so far, just give us a bit of an intro into who you are and what it is that you do.
Absolutely. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Megan, and I have spent most of my career in learning and development. So for about 18 years, I worked for the Walt Disney Company. I started as a facilitator, moved into technical writing, and then instructional design and project management. Wonderful time, lots of great stories from that experience. And then within the last 2 years, I took a huge career leap, moved over to a cybersecurity company named CrowdStrike, and now I am the employee development manager for that company. And it's been a wonderful stretch of my skills to now not just focus on coming in and triaging singular problems, but I oversee the whole experience from onboarding through when maybe they become leaders. So I focus mostly on professional development for our engineers, sales, and all sorts of folks.
Nice. I bet that was a really interesting and challenging shift at the start.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I suppose one of the things you did at the start was try and understand the culture, which leads us nicely into how do we then bring our organizational culture into learning experiences that we create, and any advice for people on how they can do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start by defining culture, because I think sometimes when we start this conversation of culture, we immediately go to geographic location. And yes, absolutely, there's country culture and things like that. When I'm talking about culture, I'm really talking about the norms that are associated with a group of people, right? So that could be things like symbols and language and celebrations and artifacts and all those pieces and parts. So when we think about culture, I was taking notes earlier. So Shristi, this is in your little concentric circles, right? This is the organizational part of it. And Rob, the language absolutely plays a huge part of it. But the reason I want to focus on culture is because it helps make your training relevant. Right. So we can go purchase lots of off the shelf stuff and offer it to people, but it is a hard transition for folks to go, this is great. How do I make this happen in my role? So citing from my personal experience, I went from the Walt Disney Company, right, whose mission is storytelling and inspiration for folks around the world, to a cybersecurity company where it's we stop breaches. First and foremost, we are good guys versus bad guys. We're on the front lines. And there's some overlap there and what they value. They highly focused on customers, highly focused on innovative services. But the way that those play out in the business are wildly different, right? So when you start developing for an organization, yes, we want to look at the learner and the who and the why, and the culture plays into that context. So understanding you know, what is the company mission, vision, values? What things do they prioritize in their people that helps drive their behavior? If you think about the language that folks use, Gary, you brought up the great point about pain, right? So in my prior role, feelings were very big in that culture. We talked a lot about what people felt when they went to the movies, what they felt when they went to the parks. Don't really talk about feelings in the cybersecurity space. Talk about pain. Okay. So it's a very similar concepts, but the way that you explain them comes across very differently. You know, and if you're not quite sure what your culture is, definitely look to the leaders of the organization, how they put themselves out in branding and marketing, but also compare yourself to folks outside of your space. I didn't realize how unique culture was until I left. Similarly, you may not understand how, like, if you think about it again from a geographic perspective, you may not understand how your own culture shapes you until you travel to a different country. So just continue to kind of compare what's going on in your world with what's happening in the worlds of others.
That really resonates with me, because before I worked at How Now, I worked in two different travel companies, and one was just about like fun family holidays. One was about travel data, and the tone of voice internally, the culture, like very much aligned to the mission and the vision of the company. One was about aspirational, get your family together. The other one was kind of like hard and fast numbers. No, we can't have any fun with this kind of coffee. So yeah, it is crazy how drastic that can be. Another thing, though, you mentioned context there and defining what culture is. You also made a great point to me before that we need to define what engaging means in our company as well, in terms of the context. You know, it's kind of an easy catch-all term to use, but actually, do we understand what engagement looks like in the context of our company?
Thank you for bringing that up. I was like ready to bring out my little soapbox. So coming from a design background, I don't know if any of y'all feel the same way. I freak out when I hear the word engaging, because it is such a biased term, and it's really hard to measure. And we've done it to ourselves, right? Like we kind of put out there, training should be engaging, should be this and that. But what I have found in consulting with various business leaders is that engaging just means I don't want a bad level one. I don't want people to say this was boring. I don't want low metrics, whatever that looks like. So whenever I hear a client say, hey, I want this to be engaging, that's kind of my cue to roll up my sleeves and dig in a little deeper. Okay, so help me understand, what does engaging look like for you? And I just want to be clear, not everything needs to be a three-act play with fireworks and musical numbers, right? I love my musicals, but sometimes that's not always appropriate for what's going on, right? So, you know, in the culture that I work in now, time is everything. You know, it's about what can I get the quickest and implement the fastest? So when I think of what's going to service my employees in the best way possible, it's short, it's fast, it's searchable, it's bookmarkable. Now to other cultures, that might be like, oh, that's boring, that's black and white, that's this. And it might be. And again, you weren't the target audience for this. This is the target audience for this. So I think, again, thinking about the who and the why and the context and the language, you really got to look at that whole organizational piece and understand, what do they need? How fast do they need to get it? Or is it more of a, we need more time to think through these things? And so does a program make more sense to give them the time and the space to reflect and think and drive that behavior change? I think just looking deeper into the question of I want some, or the request, I want something engaging, will really help drive what that looks like for that organization.
Yeah, no, I love that point around, is it bookmarkable and easy to find? Because it's easy to fall into a trap of thinking engaging means I need to add loads of bells and whistles to a piece of content. But what if people just want like five bullet points that they can pull up really easily often? So I completely agree with that point.
So I'll share a quick story with y'all. Yeah. So I distinctly remember a client asking, they had a compliance training and they wanted it to be engaging, right? And so this was my first cue into like how you need to dig deeper into this. And so a peer of mine worked tirelessly to put all the bells and whistles into this compliance training. I mean, like pop-up videos, this, I mean, it was beautiful. Presented it to the client and the client was mortified. Like, how could you make a mockery of my compliance training? And it was because engaging to them meant they read it. They engaged with the content and could sign off on it. It was a happy ending. And, you know, at the end, they figured it out. But that was my first cue into like, oh, not everybody perceives this the way that I perceive it. And I need to ask more questions before going into a project.
Yeah, perfect validation for some of what Srishti and Rob mentioned about knowing what the contextual pain points are and like you said, the kind of cultural norms as well. When we spoke before as well, you told me this really interesting thing about stuff L&D can learn from industries like party planners and gyms, for example, about keeping people engaged over time. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it may sound silly, but now that I own the experience start to finish, from the first invitation through graduation and alumni engagement. I know I just said I don't like that word, but keeping our alumni close in hand, I've had to look outside, right, and figure out how do you keep people happy, wanting to come back, wanting to be a part of this group. And so I would encourage you all to look in your communities, look at things that you subscribe to, that you're a part of, that you keep coming back time and time again. What about it makes you feel special? What about it makes you feel valued? What about it makes you feel like it's value for the time and money that you're putting into it, right? So when Gary and I were talking, we're like, you know, for those who actually go to the gym with your gym subscriptions, right? I think we're talking about this in January. What is it about that experience that makes you keep going back? If you subscribe to streaming services, what about it makes you keep going back? Is it the new content? Is it the marketing campaigns? Is it, what is it about those different things? And so as L&D professionals, look at the trends that are happening around you and figure out how you can adapt those into your broader experiences, not just the, you know, from the moment your participants start the Zoom call, but what does that communication look like before? What does it look like after? How do you keep them excited about what's coming next?
100%. There's a nice overlap actually that I've only just realized now between what you said and what Rob said. But, you know, if we define what engaging means, we can use better language internally that resonates with people. I find this all the time, having to check myself from putting like better into podcast titles, blog posts, like how do you make a better learning experience, or how do you create a more engaging content strategy? It's like, are these fluffy words, can they actually be more quantifiable? If they are more quantifiable, you can tell a better story to the internal stakeholders about the impact you can potentially have.
Absolutely. The more that you can define what your outcomes of your training will be, the less ambiguity there is, and you're able to tell that better story.
One final question from me. How important is it that we remember there is a person at the end of the learning experience?
Absolutely. So I think this goes back to Shristi's empathy piece of it, right? Most people come to learning in a time of change. And if you want to raise your hand with a Zoom emoji, I don't know how many of you react well to change, but statistically, most people don't do well with change. So whether it's they're coming in because a software is being updated, right? That means their day-to-day job is changing. I have the privilege of running a Toastmasters club within CrowdStrike. Most people come to that group because they lack self-confidence in their public speaking, and we want to create that safe environment for them to grow. Or maybe they're in a leadership training, and this is the first time ever that they've had to lead people, maybe even lead people on the same team they're previously part of. So taking all that into consideration, training ultimately is a very vulnerable space for people to walk into. And I think Rob kind of touched on this a little bit. You know, sometimes we come into that space as L&D professionals, look at all I know, look at all these amazing things. And we got to pause and go, this person might be scared. This person might be uneasy. This person might be angry, right? That their whole world is changing and they're being put into this training. So just always keep that in mind, that there are emotions from our participants on the other end. And anything you can do as part of that overall experience, understanding the culture, understanding the context of what's happening, to address that before you ever step into content, will help smooth that runway for you to make sure that learning lands the way it needs to.
Yeah, I love that vulnerability piece, because we often might see that for one person, a learning experience is a bunch of really small steps to incrementally improve over time. The Toastmasters one actually is a great example, because I was there yesterday. Someone came along, and like even just getting up to introduce who they were and why they were there was such a big challenge for them. And they just needed that support, that empathy, for people to be really considerate of that. And, you know, if you try and just fast track them to the solution or the end state super quickly, you will probably create a bad experience from over the course of it. So I love that advice on vulnerability.
Excellent. Go Toastmasters.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, if you've joined before, you know I don't need any encouragement to talk about Toastmasters to people. I would highly recommend it if anyone does have any confidence issues, or you just want to get better at speaking in front of people. I'd 100% recommend it. Megan, was there anything we didn't go over just then around bringing culture into learning experiences you'd like to share?
No, I think we covered everything, and you're still on time, so you're rocking it today.
God, I am sharp. I'm dialed in. In that case, then, I will just remind everyone to connect with Megan. I dropped your LinkedIn in the chat, so please do go and connect with Megan now. Megan, massive thank you for joining us.